This is Life Rattle number 1166. And this will be Life Rattle's last show on CKLN Internet Radio. We've been with CKLN now for more than 23 years. And we're sitting in a studio that looks like somebody has died or that there has been a divorce. The boxes are packed. The equipment that we've worked with for years is kind of piled up. It looks like something coming apart, and it is something coming apart. I'm here tonight with Guy Allen, and I'm here tonight with Virginia Ashbery to do this final show in CKLN Studios. Life Rattle is going to continue its internet presence. We're going to continue putting up podcasts on our www.liferattle.ca website. Tonight, we're going to play a part of a story written by Arnie Achtman, who, along with me, was one of the founders of Life Rattle. And this story actually was one of a series of events that eventually led Arnie and me to the work that we did. We were living in a in a rented house on Bloor Street at Bloor and Dufferin at the time, and Arnie was desperate to pay his bills to make a living, and he took on a number of jobs. Hated every one of them, but the particular job that this story is about was as a substitute teacher. And we're playing this story. I'm playing this story in part because this story contains the essence of the Life Rattle idea. When Arnie and I met and we started writing stories more to maintain our mental health and to deal with a lot of uncertainty and just to people who didn't really have much confidence and didn't know what we were doing. We started writing about our lives, and we would read these stories to each other. And in particular, we would write about things that would take place as we that would happen to us as we made forays out into the world. And one of the things that we wrote about, Arnie wrote about his substitute teaching gig that he did in his in the story sub that we're going to listen to tonight. After a few years of doing this, Arnie and I kind of started holding conversations, and we said, well, why isn't there writing about the lives that people lead? Why do we read writing that seems to be about exotic, faraway things? Why don't we hear writing about the lives that people here in Toronto lead? I mean, ordinary people. We talked about this a lot, and of course, years later, this led to the founding of Life Rattle and a whole enterprise where we encourage people to write about the lives that they know and lead. So, enough of that intro. Let's listen now to Arnie Achtman read part one of his story, Sub.
I wrote this story in 1982-83 and performed it at Ace Base in a show with Guy Allen called Cats in the Fridge and Other Tales from the Cold, White Boys Unwrap, as part of the Writer as Performance series in May 1984. Sub. I left my parents' home in Montreal to study at the Graduate Drama Center, University of Toronto. My parents were into graduate school. They paid. I was into acting. The Drama Center was into critics, scholars, and teachers. After I got my MA, I left graduate school. I mailed my degree back to my parents and stayed in Toronto. The alternate theater scene in 1974 excited me. It had the energy and enthusiasm of a teenager. In the next 2 years, I got paid for acting in 3 plays and 1 or 2 workshops. That was not enough to make a living. It was hardly enough to pay rent. I didn't work for stretches of 8 months. I didn't want a full-time job. I wanted more acting jobs. I didn't know what to do. I had never driven cabs or waited tables. I didn't have a driver's license, and whenever I went to apply for a waitering job, the manager asked if I had experience in restaurants, and I choked. I said I ate out a lot and was willing to learn. I got a part-time job substitute teaching at suburban junior high schools. The job required a university degree, any degree. I had one. 2. That made me feel more qualified, like I had experience. The North York Board of Education held its hiring examination on a Friday afternoon in February. I got transcripts of my university grades, put on a jacket and tie, and rode the subway up Yonge Street to the Board of Education building. It was a big building with nothing around it for hundreds of yards except gray snow. Even the parking lot was removed. Maybe it was a big green lawn in the summer. Inside, on an upper floor, were 15 or 20 other applicants. They looked like the kind of people I never talked to in high school. We sat in a room and listened to some guy tell us about substitute teaching. The room had no windows, beige vinyl walls and chairs, and rows of fluorescent lights along the ceiling. The guy told us how we would be called for a job, where and when we might have to teach, and that we should be flexible. Discipline problems are not out of the ordinary, he said. I thought about the examination, about getting the right answers to the questions, about passing the test and getting the job. The guy told us what we had to wear. He gave out the dispatcher's phone numbers for the different zones and told us who to call about grievances. Then he passed out pencils and sheets of paper. He told us to fill out the papers in another room down the hall while he stayed and talked to the next group. In the other room, I sat between 2 people at a long table. I put my exam paper face down in front of me. I looked beside me. I could see what the people on either side of me wrote on their exams. I turned my exam paper over. It was an application form. What a relief. I can answer these questions easily. Where it asked for preferred subjects, I circled literature and theater arts. Where it asked for preferred zone, I circled West. Where it asked when I would be available, I circled immediately. That was the hardest question. If you were going to teach, a dispatcher phoned between 6:45 and 7:30 a.m. They asked for you by name, then told you the name of the school and its location, the grades and the subjects you were to teach. You had to be at school by 8:45. Monday morning, I woke up at 6 o'clock, took 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C, and did 15 minutes of exercise. The last play I was in, an older actor took me aside and told me I was good, but I was stupid if I didn't get my body in shape. I didn't want to be stupid. I figured exercise was good discipline to wake me up for teaching. I usually woke up between 10 and noon. After I got dressed, I went downstairs to the kitchen. I had 2 cups of coffee and cigarettes. Then I lay down on the living room couch and waited for the phone to ring. At 7:10, I got a call to teach literature and theater arts to grades 8 and 9. I never heard of the cross streets the dispatcher listed. I phoned transit information to find out how to get to the school. It was a 75-minute bus ride. On the Dufferin bus going north, I thought about teaching. All I could think about was when I was in grade 8 and we had a substitute teacher. It was a free period. We never did any schoolwork. Our energies went into breaking as many rules as we could. If the teacher got in our way, we tried to break him or her. The best a substitute could do was to stay out of it and hope we didn't cause too much noise or physical damage. I was pretty active when we had substitute teachers. I knew a lot of tricks. On the bus, I tried to remember what they were. I knew I needed to stay a step ahead of the students. I arrived right at 8:45. The school was low and flat, 2 stories high. It extended for 100 yards on both sides of the main entrance, then curved away gently at both ends. The brick was beige with pale green trim around the doors and windows. It looked modern, not the latest thing, but not much older than the students. I walked up the stairs inside the main doors to sign in at the office. The halls were full of kids. They were the same kind of kids I went to high school with. Their clothes looked new. The faded denim was bleached. Some of the boys wore professional team jerseys. Some of the girls wore lipstick and knee-high leather boots with heels. Their faces were clean. The faces with acne looked polished. There were braces on teeth. There were a few black students. I didn't see any kids who looked like they came from a different neighborhood. No heavy repeaters or street gang types. I heard the mayor's daughter went to that school. I checked in at the office and was assigned a homeroom. It was still 10 minutes before class. I went to the staff room and had more coffee and cigarettes. The other teachers talked easily among themselves. I drank and smoked and tried to remember tricks. My homeroom was just down the hall from the staff room. I entered and sat on the teacher's desk, 1 foot dangling, 1 foot on the floor. A few kids looked and pointed at me to their friends. I opened the top drawer of the teacher's desk and pulled out a textbook and a folder. Inside the folder were class lists and pieces of paper outlining each class's assignment. 8E, pages 51 to 57, Modern Styles. Have read and notes made. Check notes. More kids came in. A few of them called me Sir loudly and asked if I was the sub. I said yes, now sit in your seats, please. They wanted to know what happened to the regular teacher. I said I didn't know. Then the bell rang. It shot through me. I looked at the clock. Go. 40 minutes. Do something. Find something to fill up the time. I looked at the class list. I'll take attendance. Then I remembered my substitute teachers who took attendance. They were assholes. I couldn't think of anything else to do. I got out my pen, clicked it, looked at the list, and started calling out names. Rosalie Abramovitz. Rosalie said, yeah, like I was going to ask her to do something she didn't want to do. It's okay, I said, just seeing if you were here. Rosalie turned back to the girl behind her and resumed talking. I looked at the clock on the wall over the door. So far, so good. Almost a minute gone. Slow but steady. When I got to the first absentee, a flurry of voices erupted. He's never here. He went to the doctor. His mother died. His budgie died. He got a dose. You're lucky he's not here, sir. I stood up and shouted quiet. The room became still for 2 seconds. Then a big kid at the back of the class said, it's okay, sir. He's not in this class anymore. I felt broken. But it was too early to be broken. I had to do this job for a few months. How could I be broken on my first day? I just hadn't found the groove yet. Continuing to take attendance seemed dangerous now, but I had to go through with it. I looked at the list, read out a name, looked up, and stared at the back wall. I didn't see where the answer came from. I couldn't look at any of them. When attendance was finished, I put the paper back in the drawer. I looked at the clock. 15 minutes, almost halfway. Then someone said, you gotta send that paper to the office, sir. It's a trick, I thought. I didn't move. I sat at the desk and stared at the back wall. I tried to think of a strategy. Another voice came at me. It's true, sir. You're supposed to sign your name and put the date and send it to the office, sir. I'll take it there for you. A girl came down the aisle toward me. Never mind, sit down. But, sir, sit down. I turned to face her. My hand felt for the drawer and the paper inside. The girl didn't sit down. She stood in the aisle. She wore tight jeans, sneakers, and a pink and yellow sweatshirt. She tossed her hair and moved her hips from side to side. I looked at the paper and saw blank lines for my signature and the date. I filled them in and handed the sheet to the kid seated nearest my desk. He wore an oversized crimson football jersey with golden number 32s and O.J. Simpson printed across the back. I told him to take the paper to the office. He jumped out of his seat and ran for the front door. He shouted at the back of the class, "See you at recess." The girl in the pink and yellow looked at the ceiling, said, "Give me a break," then walked back to her seat and sat down sloppily. I looked at the clock, halfway, downhill from here. I stood up slowly and walked around the room. I told the class they all had work to do and they knew what it was, and I wanted them to do it quietly and on their own. I walked up and down the aisles between the rows of desks. There was silence immediately in front of me. A steady din off to both sides curled in behind me as I paced the floor. It took a minute and a half to make a complete tour of the room. I figured this was a good way to spend the rest of the period. As long as I didn't say anything to them, they couldn't start anything and get me. One kid asked me to help him do a math problem. "This isn't math class. Do your English lesson," I said. "But sir, I need to have it done for next period. It was due last week." "Look, this is English class," I began, then stopped. "It's a trick. Let him do his math. Just keep him quiet." I walked up behind him and spoke slowly. "Okay, you can do your math, but do it quietly, by yourself." "Thanks, sir," he said. He turned to the kid next to him and asked if he saw the game last night. I kept moving with my pocket of silence in front of me. I stared into it. With 3 minutes left in the period, O.J. Simpson returned to class. "I went to the office, then I went to the bathroom. I think I got a stomach ache." He leaned over and started talking to someone in the next row. "Keep it down," I said, not stopping my tour. I made it back to the desk and stood beside it when the bell rang for the end of the period. "That's all for today," I said. "We got you again this afternoon, sir. 5th period after lunch." "You do? Well, we'll continue then where we left off," I said. I went and stood by the door while they walked out past me. When the room was empty, I looked around at disarranged desks and scribblings on the blackboard. I didn't know what I had to do next. I closed both doors and stepped into the hall to check my schedule. I had 2 more classes that day. The 5th after lunch, and a grade 9 arts for the 7th, the last period of the afternoon. I went to the staff room and lit a cigarette. I kept pacing. I didn't want to relax. I had done 1, 2 more to go. I wanted to keep my momentum. A teacher came over to me. He asked how it was going. I smiled and shrugged my shoulders. "Oh, you know." We sat down. He asked if I was the sub. How long I had been doing it, did I like it? I leaned toward him. I felt like talking. "I don't really do this. I'm an actor," I said. "Oh, are you in anything?" "No, not now." We nodded to each other. We nodded to ourselves. There was no further conversation. There was reading material in the staff room. The morning papers sprawled in sections over chairs and couches. Old issues of Time, Maclean's, Newsweek, Reader's Digest lay around on tables. More neatly stacked on the shelves above the counter where the kettle was were professional teacher magazines. The ones from the union discussed upcoming contract proposals. The ones from the Department of Education listed upgrading qualifications and extension courses. The ones from the trade publishers had research articles on the latest methods and theories for educating rare and peculiar learning disabilities. These magazines had small print, lots of charts and graphs, and photos with numbered captions. I didn't have to know that stuff. I wasn't a teacher. I thought of phoning the CBC and trying to see a casting officer. When I filled out my teaching application, I put down I was not available Wednesdays. I figured breaking up the week would make it easier and I could look for acting work on Wednesdays. Today was Monday. I had done one, two more to go. $40 a day. I wasn't allowed to leave the school during my spare periods. There was nowhere to go. It was all houses and yards out there. In the summer it was green. Now it was mostly gray with some white spots. Half a mile down the road was a row of 10 stores set back from the sidewalk by a parking lot. Some kids went there for lunch and after school. The bus going back downtown went by the staff room windows every 15 to 20 minutes. I ate lunch by myself in the staff cafeteria. After lunch, I went back to the classroom. I stood by the desk. I recognized a few faces. I returned a few quick smiles. All I have to do when the bell goes is tell them the same shit about doing their own work quietly, then do 30 tours of the room, and the period will be over. The bell rang. I closed the front door, then faced the class. I told them they knew what they had to do, and I wanted them to do it quietly. Then I thought, what the hell? And added, if you have finished all your work, you may talk quietly. Quietly. I started pacing. This felt better than the morning. Maybe I'll get to answer a question. You haven't taken attendance, sir. I didn't break stride or look around. Another trick. Well, fuck you. I'm wise. You don't take attendance in the afternoon. I couldn't even be a nice guy. Yeah, yeah. Attendance, sir. It got loud. Every period, sir. I walked to the teacher's desk and pulled the class list from the drawer. In the lower left corner was a blank with time frame written after it. I smiled at the class and sat down. I looked at the list and read out the first name. I heard something. When I looked up, I saw five boys running out the back door. They were gone by the time I stood up and shouted to stop. I walked slowly to the front door, opened it, and looked both ways down the hall. Nothing. I turned around and shut the door behind me. I quietly ordered the back door shut. Four kids jumped up, two sneaked out. I looked at the clock. 8 minutes had gone by. I didn't know what to do. I wanted to run out of the classroom screaming, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. I knew I couldn't do that. If I did that, I would be broken. I had a job to do. I moved my eyes slowly across the room. My voice rose as I spoke. Look, there's two ways we can do this. If you get along with me, I'll get along with you. But if you hassle my ass, then I'll hassle yours. Is that clear? Now the next person I catch doing something is going to the office. I sat down. Sir, can I say something? No. But sir, you, get to the office. Now. You heard me. Move. I pointed at him. The kid left the room shaking his head. The room became still. I stared at the back wall. I noticed a raised hand and acknowledged it. A tall girl in a gray skirt and a white blouse left her seat and came toward me. She leaned over and put a piece of paper on my desk. She spoke softly. It's all filled out, same as this morning. Shall I take it to the office? Yes. Please. Thank you. I said. She gave me a long smile. I signed the sheet, stood up, and started pacing. With 10 minutes to go in the period, a gang of kids ran screaming down the hall past the classroom. I froze. This was the end. General insurrection. The class would erupt, and I was helpless in shock. They would knock me down and stampede out of the room over me, and I would be unable to move, but would feel every spiked boot heel and rubber sneaker sole on my face and body. But it didn't. A rustle of chatter died out quickly. I waited for my feet, then moved slowly toward the teacher's desk. The remaining kids filed out quickly through both doors at the bell. I sat in the empty room and ran my fingers through my hair. I pulled hard to get my fingers through the curls. I had trouble catching my breath. I walked to the office and waved off the kid I had sent there. I was ashamed to look at him. The staff room was empty. Good. 40 minutes break till the next class. 2 down, 1 to go. Relax. I plugged in the kettle and looked for a plastic cup. The mugs belonged to the regular teachers. I leafed through a section of the paper as I drank my coffee and smoked a cigarette. A woman in her late 40s came in. She wore brown leather shoes with gum soles and a brown tweed skirt. We exchanged smiles. She asked if I was the theater arts sub. I put down the paper and nodded. She was a regular theater arts teacher. She asked where I studied. I told her I wasn't really a teacher. I was an actor. She told me about the training she took with some guy who went to the Yale Drama School and once took an intensive workshop under Jerzy Grotowski. She asked if I was familiar with Grotowski's work. I was familiar with Grotowski's work from graduate school. That was 2 years ago. Grotowski was in Poland. I was in Toronto trying to get seen for an extra part on a CBC TV show. I asked her if she knew anything about the class I was going to teach. She thought for a moment. Oh, they're all the same, really. You know how kids that age can't take anything seriously, she said. I asked if they were working on a play or reading scenes or anything like that. She asked if the regular teacher hadn't left a lesson guide for me. I thanked her for reminding me and looked in my folder. The regular teacher suggested theater games. Pick animal or object. Act it out. No words. Others try to guess. Suggest time, place, event. Improvise skits around one or more themes. I can't do skits or games. I'll get wiped out. The bell rang. I went to the theater arts audiovisual room. It was like a regular classroom, except the floor was carpeted and the desks were not arranged. A phonograph and movie projector stood on separate metal wheel trays at the back. The kids entered in groups. They looked at me. The boys in this class were big. You a teacher? One of them asked. I'm just substituting. I'm an actor. Yeah? What commercials you done? I told the class to sit down. I asked if they all had their books. The noise sounded vaguely affirmative. I pulled out a class list, signed it, and handed it to the nearest student. I told her to fill it out and take it to the office. Then I told the class we were going to read scenes from their books. I assigned parts quickly and randomly. I told them we were going to read 3 scenes, spending 10 minutes on each one. In the remaining time, we would discuss what they learned. If you don't have a book, sit quietly with someone who does. If there's any trouble, we're here till 4 o'clock. We read the scenes. The kids made jokes and laughed a lot. Their laughter had a cleansing sound. As long as it didn't get too loud, I let them laugh. A couple of times, I laughed too. In the middle of the second scene, the bell rang. It was over. I hadn't looked at the clock once. I closed my book quickly. Thank you, that's all for today, I said. I walked out of the class. I walked slowly along the halls. I didn't want to be in the homeroom while the students got their homework ready. I just wanted to see them out and lock up. After that, I took the key to the office and was released for the day. The secretary thanked me for filling in. I put on my coat and went outside across the street to wait for the bus going downtown. It was filled with school kids. I stood at the back and stared at the ads. When I got home, I went upstairs to my room. I stayed there for 3 hours. I lay on my back with my eyes open and stared into the air. I wasn't sleepy, but my brain felt exhausted. I couldn't talk to anyone. I had no words. I thought about the day. I did it. It was hard. I was an asshole. I made $40. There was no other way. They had to go to school, and I had a job to do.
Going to switch over. Yeah, okay. Well, at least I don't know whether you can hear me out there, but we at least see something on the meters here. It may be an illusion. At this point, illusions are good. That was former Life Rattle producer and Life Rattle co-founder Arnie Achtman reading from his amazing story, Sub. That was part one of Sub. I remember Arnie and I were just, we were living in a rented house together when he took this substitute teaching job. It was absolute torture for him. Part of one of his survival tactics was to sit around and tell me stories about it. And I said to him, I said, Arnie, you got to write these stories down. He did write this story down. This process ended up over a decade of being the essence of the Life Rattle idea. It's kind of unvarnished realism, details, shows you what it's like to be there, and the psychic state of the writer revealed through the details in the setting that he sees and the way he sees things. His lack of confidence, his terror in the face of these kids, in the face of this job. And that's something that most of us, I think, when we hear that, we can connect with. And this really represents the essence of what we wanted to do ourselves and to help other people to do when we founded Life Rattle. I'm wondering if you'd like to say something about this, Virginia.
Sure. Thanks, Guy. What I love about all the stories that we hear on Life Rattle are that, for the most part, they're ordinary people telling ordinary stories, ones we can all relate to, situations we've all been in. But the beauty is that all these people have taken the time to learn the craft of writing. They've learned how to put those thoughts down, those meanings down in a palatable form, one that I know everybody out there who's a Life Rattle devotee has, you know, hung on every word every week. And it works. It works. And I think that's the big draw, is that we can all relate to these stories, but they're told in such a beautiful way. Such a straightforward, honest reality, and people want to hear that. They want to hear themselves reflected in the stories on these shows. And you know what? A lot of the people who like listening to these stories have gone on to take the courses and learn to write and have told their stories and been absolutely proud as piss for doing it. And I think it's added to the written historical fact that we leave behind. Life Rattle is going to continue. We're going to continue getting more of these stories from writers. We're going to podcast them and maybe even find a new home on another radio station. That would be wonderful. I wish CKLN all the success in their new digs over at Regent Park. I hope things continue and grow for them. And as I'm sure Life Rattle is going to continue to grow. And, I've been very pleased to be part of it. And just keep on writing, people. Just keep on writing. Thanks for being there for me. Bye now.
The essence of the CKLN idea is really that CKLN is us. It is the community. We are the people who live here. And it's about... It's what the media should be. It should show us. We should see ourselves in the media around us. It's sad to have this parting with CKLN. I'm not even really sure that this parting is the parting. I don't know exactly what's going to happen with CKLN. I will always feel a part of CKLN, and I'm really hoping that through some kind of events of some kind that CKLN may be able to restore its broadcast presence, or that maybe something new can rise from its ashes. To everyone who's been a part of CKLN and who's been a part of the past 25 years of broadcasting here, I just want to say that I feel like one of you, and I'm so happy to have been a part of you. So, Life Rattle listeners, stay with us on the podcast. Life Rattle remains an internet presence. CKLN, good luck with your move. I hope that everything goes better than you can possibly expect. That's it for Life Rattle number 1166. Check Life Rattle website for our podcast next Sunday evening. I'm Guy Allen.